Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Anna.
And I'm Caroline.
And welcome to Seriously, the New Statesman podcast that takes pop culture seriously.
This week, we're talking about Greta Gerwig's film Lady Bird and the BBC police drama Collateral.
Caroline has also watched the BBC Three comedy Young Offenders for the first time, so we'll be talking about how that went later in the show. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back to another episode of Seriously. Oh, Caroline, there's one thing I did want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, I went to see Hamilton, which was incredible.
So I'm going on the 21st of March.
I think we should talk about it, even though we'll be really late.
Yeah, I think we should
too. I think we should devote an episode to British London Hamilton, because it's definitely worth talking about in detail, isn't it?
Yes. So I feel like, what, 2 years ago maybe, when Hamilton first blew up on Broadway, we got loads and loads of emails from people being like, when are you going to talk about Hamilton?
And we were like, we're never going to see it.
And we took the view that although we like listened to the soundtrack and really liked it, I've read the book as well, we were like, well, there's no way we're ever going to see it, so it would be weird if we were to critique it. Whereas now, eventually, in about a month's time, we will both have seen it.
So exciting.
Very excited about that. So look forward to that in a... Well, yeah, that'll be like end of March. Probably we'll be able to talk about it once I've finally seen it.
Great.
The other thing to point out to look forward to, listeners, is next week's episode, the 27th of February, is our second book club episode for which we are reading The Seven Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle.
Caroline is so excited
about this book. I'm so excited about this book. I have so many thoughts about it. I've seen a few of you tweeting saying that you're reading it.
So have I. People are getting into it, I think, on Seriously Twitter.
Yeah, the author, Stuart Turton, is like super
asking people what they think of the book.
he's super
so
excited to like
author,
hear people's thoughts.
I would like not want to know anyone's thoughts. I'd
no,
be like,
I know.
Keep them to yourself, guys, not interested.
I know, but he's like really open to just hearing I think because he told, well, you'll hear when we play the interview next week, but he told me that he's currently working on his next book.
So he wants the feedback.
Which is another like detective story, but set in a completely different period and very kind of different. But I think he feels like if he made any major cock-ups in this one, he'd like to know now.
I'd like to know. Wow. Well, a solid respect for that guy. Mm. That's really cool.
But yeah, so still time to grab your copy and have a read so you can join in next week.
Yay! So I'm so excited for the first thing that we're going to talk about this week. I've wanted to talk about this for so long. We're going to talk about Lady Bird, a coming-of-age drama written and directed by Greta Gerwig. It stars Saoirse Ronan as Christine Lady Bird McPherson, a 17-year-old in Sacramento, California. Through the film, we see her handling a difficult relationship with her mother, played by Laurie Metcalf, her desire to fit in with the cool set at her Catholic high school, and her interactions with boys. I was really excited about this film long before I saw it, because I just feel like it's one of those films that kind of has me, women my age, seriously written all over it. And then I saw it finally a couple of months ago at a screening. It came out, it's one of those films that we got so much later than America,
yeah,
which is annoying.
It's really annoying. It came out like last
November in America.
In America, yes.
We finally get it on the 23rd of February, but it is out already in some cinemas in the UK.
Yes.
But if it's not looking available in your cinema at the time of listening to this on sort of Tuesday, it probably will be at the weekend. So keep your eyes peeled. Yeah, so this is the first solo film directed by Greta Gerwig and written solely by her as well. So she's co-written and co-directed a few films at this point. So she's not a stranger to directing by any means, but this is her first sort of movie that is like, this is my film with my sign off on all the details. And yeah, Saoirse Ronan's in the lead, and what an amazing pairing they make. It's such a beautiful movie.
It is so beautiful. I have to say, I deliberately didn't look up that much about the background of how it got made before watching it, but afterwards went and researched it. And the first thing I Googled, because I thought I already knew based on the film, but I was right, is Greta Gerwig from Sacramento?
Yeah.
Because I was like, I think it would be really hard for someone who wasn't from a town to have made such a sort of loving portrait of a place.
Totally.
Because Lady Bird, the main character, there's even a scene where one of the nuns from her school talks to her about this, because she writes her college application essay about Sacramento and sort of about her desire to leave Sacramento behind, because she wants to go to college on the East Coast and like leave California. And periodically she says like, oh, I really hate Sacramento, da, 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 da. But actually in hating it or thinking that she hates it, she has this incredibly detailed observation of it. And in the end, I think she realizes that she loves it.
Yeah. And it's one of those tricky things, isn't it? Because I think the personal touch is all over this movie in the specificity of it. So yeah, like in the details of how Sacramento is portrayed, but also in just like little life details, like the books that Timothy Chalamet's character is reading and the specific clothing, all these, there are just like so many like little tiny details where you're like, oh, the fact that you're talking about clove cigarettes in this way definitely comes from some sort of personal experience. Yeah. But at the same time, a lot of people have been like, oh, this is clearly an autobiographical film, which is a comment that women, especially women directors early in their career and women writers early in their career, always get. And I think Greta Gerwig's been quite resistant to that and been quite like, hang on, how do you know this is autobiographical? What do you know about my autobiography?
Yeah. Well, that, I have to say that wasn't my thought. It wasn't, is this about her life? It was more just, she clearly has a very deep knowledge of this place and of people like these, which has enabled her to make a story from it, if you know what I mean. It never really even occurred to me that like, oh, she probably had an upbringing like this. I have no idea.
Exactly.
I still don't know. Yeah. And I don't ridiculously
want to. And there are
to.
Things like, you know, the financial hardship of this particular family and other things, which I have no idea if they map onto her experience at all. So the film takes place over one school year in Lady Bird or Christine's life. It's her final year in high school and she's applying to colleges. It's such a kind of defining and iconic year, I think, for everyone, whether or not you enjoy it, whether or not anything of note really happens. It's just like such a big year in your life because it's that midpoint between childhood and adulthood. It's a very classic time used for coming of age films. In a lot of ways, this is a very traditional coming of age film in that sense, in that it's tonally like between comedy and drama. It hits all the key points in the year. You've got Thanksgiving, Christmas, prom. It hits all the classic struggles, which are like, am I doing well enough in school? Does this boy fancy me? Who are the coolest friends that I can have? Yeah. Am I in the right social circle? Am I going to wear the nicest dress I can to prom? And like, what am I going to do with my life after school? Is there more than just my background to aspire to? So I feel like this film has been talked about as though it's very groundbreaking in lots of ways. In lots of ways, it's kind of not. In lots of ways, it's kind of a very traditional coming of age story. But as we were saying, it is so in the details and in the emotional truth of the film that makes it so special. And I think for me, as there's just something in how the 2002 setting is handled and how there are no characters in this that, I think the script is very generous in that it just gestures towards every single character and is like, oh, this person has more going on. They're not just a two-dimensional support character for Lady Bird. And the most obvious place that Greta Gerwig does that is in the relationship with the mother. The mother's a very, very three-dimensional, fleshed-out character. I think Greta Gerwig has said she wanted the mother to be the main character in a kind of sneaky way that you don't really realise. But I think it happens with so many characters in this film where you're like, okay, well, they seem like the best friend, sidekick, but then you get, they get extra lines that just kind of gesture towards this whole massive interiority that Lady Bird's maybe not thinking about, but is there nevertheless.
Mm. Yeah, there was a line in Julian Simpson, who's a screenwriter, I subscribe to a newsletter he does called Info Dump, and he had a little paragraph where he wrote about it this week, where he said that in Lady Bird, Greta Gerwig does a lot of things that are actually very hard and makes them look really, really easy. Mm. And he thinks that as a result, it won't necessarily get rewarded with the kind of awards and stuff it deserves, mm. because she's made making a very fresh story in a traditional mm-hmm. model look really, really simple. Mm. Where he was saying, like, as someone who's been writing films his whole career, I can tell you it is not easy. Mm. And that, I hadn't even thought of that, but I think that's true. You're right. It's not really groundbreaking in the sense that she hasn't, like, invented a new genre or... I don't know what you would even call groundbreaking in films these days, mm. but it is a very familiar set of tropes, mm. but it's just done in such a way that you feel like you're seeing it for the first time.
Totally.
You feel like, oh, I've never watched a film about a young woman deciding where to go to college before, whereas obviously you have.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that is really amazing and something that I don't think I've really seen done in this way before is the editing. I think it's such a well-edited mm. movie. From the outset, it's obvious, I think, really, that you're going to see a full year in this character's life, but it's so densely packed that I think almost every scene in this film is like under a minute long, mm. which is very unusual. And you get so many of these flashes of almost like montage-like sequences, whether it's people auditioning for the school musical or
yeah.
Christine's mother sewing her prom dress, or you get all these like little moments. And I think it really does just give you this sense of, when you're that age, time just runs away with you. You feel like you've been building up to moments like prom for so long, and then they just happen and they're gone before you can even mm. think about it. And there's that sense of movement and time really overlapping and all these things unfolding in a way that Christine doesn't really have any control over, that I find really amazingly done. Because you just, even if you only get a little flash of her and her friend doing something, it feels really specific and you're like, oh wow, I totally understand. Mm. Like that scene where they're eating
communion wafers
and talking about masturbation. Yeah. It doesn't actually have any real significance to the plot, but it's such a great little moment to have. And without it, their relationship would be less textured. And there's a few things like that, even just like Christine swimming in the pool with like the cooler girl
mm-hmm.
who's like, well, I'm never going to leave Sacramento. Things like that, they're actually not that significant in terms of plot, but you really do need them for other things. And I don't know, I was just like, it kind of sat there. The first time I watched it in the cinema, it was just like really washing over me, all this stuff happening. And it like means that you get this building up of emotion because you feel very like, yeah. you know where her life is going and what's going on without actually having to have it spelled out for you at all.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend about it recently and she asked me, did you cry in this film? And I was like, yeah, I did, but not at the
point.
It
was one long cry.
It was one long cry, but it was not at the point where I thought I would. The bit where I cried was the bit where, was actually, so in support of what you say about the mother really being the main mm. character, is when she like drops her off at the airport to go to mm. college and they've had a fight because Lady Bird didn't tell her that she was applying to mm. schools on the East Coast. And the mother's really worried about what it's going to do for the family's financial situation. And so she doesn't get out the car. And then... she drives off and then she realizes that, what am I doing? Like, I have to say goodbye. So she drives back round and like runs into the airport, but she's too late. And
that
just made me weep.
Yeah, I think so many of those quieter scenes, like you say, that have lots of Sacramento in there. I don't know anything about Sacramento. I've never been to Sacramento. Mm. But what I do know is having that very specific relationship with place, which is like, oh my God, I can't wait to get out of here. Mm. When actually you look back and you're like, I didn't want to get out of there. It was actually like so beautiful and such a nice place to grow up. And it has specific, you know, resonance for your life. Like it gives, I think Greta Gerwig says it gives you what a place should give you, which is roots and wings, which, mm. like somewhere to be from and somewhere to want to go. Those are the moments that made me kind of just like have a quiet weep in my chair, like not really knowing why, just all the kind of like really beautiful shots of Sacramento, that montage scene right at the end where it's both
of them driving.
Driving is yeah. amazing. So yeah, I mean, we haven't really talked that much about the plot of this movie, but I guess that's not really the point.
That's not really the point. And also, I think if you're going to see it, which you all should, you want that to unfold for you.
Yeah, totally. It also, we should say it's so funny. It's like yes, a very broad yeah. comedy in lots of places, like very kind of silly, they're doing this musical, Merrily We Roll Along, and there's loads of kind of like very silly physical comedy and other kinds of comedy. I like love the joke where Julie and Christine are arguing about, you know, Christine like having cooler friends. Julie's yes. like her best friend. And she's like, you didn't even show up to musical theatre rehearsals and you've been given a really big part. And she's like, I didn't even get a part. They just made up a part because they didn't want to give anyone no parts. And she's like, you got the part of the Tempest. And she's like, there is no Tempest in the Tempest. And Julie's like, it's the titular role.
Yeah, that was really funny.
Yeah, it's so there are loads of things like that that just really made me laugh. I also, some moments just make you laugh out loud with recognition. Like there's a scene where Lady Bird's losing her virginity to Timothée Chalamet and she has a nosebleed. And literally I was like, drag me. That has so happened to me. And it's just like, there are so many little moments like that that are really silly, really funny, but the whole picture with these little sketches of an entire year just add up to something really moving, which is why it's so great.
Yeah, it is really, really good. I hope it gets lots of recognition and awards, but my hunch is that Julian Simpson is right and it probably won't.
We'll see, eh? Fingers crossed. Mm-hmm.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Now we're going to talk about Collateral, which is a four-part police detective drama on the BBC, written by David Hare and starring Carey Mulligan, Billy Piper and John Sim. The story begins with the shooting of a pizza delivery man on a London street, an apparently straightforward crime that in fact conceals a multitude of secrets.
So Carey Mulligan, as a kind of police detective, is not really a role I was expecting to see from her. But here she is, solving crimes.
Yeah, I have to say, I haven't really researched this, but my hunch is that she's in it because of David Hare. She's done several of his plays, and I think they...
They're probably mutual fans, aren't they?
I think they're mutual fans, and I think they found that they work well together. Yeah. So I think when he made this, again, slightly unexpected departure into TV, she came with.
We're seeing a lot of, I feel like, British theatre people doing lots of TV at the moment. Jack Thorne has done so much TV in the last few years, and he's obviously from a theatre background. And I do think you can hear it in dialogue often.
Yes, I do think that's true.
Which is stagier.
Yeah, I mean, that's something interesting that I found about Collateral is that whilst it does have all of the trappings of a police procedural, such that we're very, very familiar with, it doesn't actually really have that feel when you're watching it because it's so much more, I don't want to say cinematic as a like loaded term, but just cinematic in the sense of like, dramatic and even melodramatic and in the way it's shot and all this kind of stuff, which slightly took me aback when in the first 10 minutes or so, because I was like, but you know, they're like detectives and they're ducking under the tape to look at a crime scene, but then also somehow they're talking to each other in a way that I don't think police detectives would ever do.
Yeah,
there's no impulse to realism, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. And I think people have kind of criticized the Carey Mulligan character in that sort of way for not being like, are there any actual police women who behave like this? But then sometimes that's the joy of characterization is like, why is this unconventional person doing this job? So I don't want to critique it for that too early. But basically, we do get some of her backstory as she's looking into this murder of a pizza delivery man, which is that she's a former famous like Olympic level athlete and a former teacher.
I know, and I kept waiting for more explanation of that, and it just, in the first episode at least, it just doesn't arise. Also, she's quite pregnant.
Yeah.
And at no point does anyone really mention this or like explain it, or not that it has to be explained, but just like, I don't know, I feel like in real life someone would at least be like, are you all right? You haven't slept at all and now you're working a full day.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you like to sit down?
Isn't her fiance or husband, or is he in the morning, he's like, oh, can you really do this? She's like, oh, I want to. And then they cut to her smiling in the cab, which is always a shortcut for like, she is really, really like a workaholic and really, mm-hmm. I feel like there's so many things where someone smiles and you're like, oh, they actually love it. Like in action movies.
Yeah.
Like in Search Party, where she's like running down the street and then she like smiles and you're like, ooh, you're really obsessed with this crime solving. But when I see it, I'm always like, maybe she's just read a funny meme. She's thinking about a meme she saw earlier.
That's exactly
what
I thought.
Could be not so deep.
I really enjoyed that little scene where Carey Mulligan is just smiling to herself in a car and like being driven through darkened London. Because, you know, she's a great actor.
Thinking about some great sex she had the other day.
Yeah, but that's exactly how it struck me. I was like, I haven't been told enough about you to know why you are smiling. So I'm just going to write in my own idea, which is that like someone did a funny fart or something.
Yeah, exactly. Really funny. So it's kind of like full of classic British actresses, isn't it? It's like, and actors. So you've got Billy Piper, Kerry Mulligan, John Sim. It's pretty heavyweight casting, which is fun. And I really enjoyed John Sim in this as a kind of like senior Labour Party politician. His constituency seems to be like Kensington.
Well, it's Battersea is where it's filmed, but I don't know where they're actually pretending it is. That was something that, like, very niche concern annoyed me about this, is though there was quite a lot of, like, people going across bridges in the wrong direction and then arriving at places that
That's classic, yeah, though, for London.
So there was a bit where, like, John Sim went across a bridge from south to north and then arrived at a place that is in the south of London. But, you know, no one apart from me cares about that. He's meant to be, like, an inner London MP. Anyway.
Yeah, and I found his characterization slightly annoying because he's just like, oh, it's the middle of the night and I'm going to look at some papers, i.e. working. And then, you know, his girlfriend or whoever is like annoyed with him about it. And he's like, hey, you think you find the Labour Party annoying? How do you think I feel? And you're like, oh, God, that's some really raw dialogue.
I did find it interesting, the slight political divisions that are hinted at, because David Hebb has written fairly regularly for the New Statesman about like contemporary politics, and so we do know that these are like his own personal views that he's putting into it, because like there's a scene where John Sim is watching an interview that his party leader is doing on television, and she's kind of saying like, you know, we do support controls of our borders.
Yeah, she's refusing to commit to any sort of left-wing ideology,
and he's
for
getting
fear of putting off voters, basically.
Yeah, and he's getting really angry about it while he's watching it. So that I thought was interesting, as a, not that that's specifically the Labour Party's division at the moment, but it is a division in politics, the idea between like, you know, big cities where everyone's like really pro-immigration and thinks it's great, and then the problem of politicians who have to appeal to people who don't think that.
Yeah.
And
if anyone's interested in Caroline and I's taste in men, we both think that John Sim is like extremely fit in this.
He's
as the
so
kind
hot.
Of like middle class Labour MP. That's
I don't
so
know.
Embarrassing.
I know. There's a bit where he wears a black t-shirt and glasses.
Yeah,
which
he looks
is
great.
Really nice.
Smashing it, John Sim. Well done. I also wanted to shout out, sorry, we've talked so much about casting, but I really wanted to, a kind of British actor who's not in loads of things is in this that I really like. His name's Nathaniel Martello White. He plays DS Nathan Bilk. So he's the second in command to
Kerry
Mulligan.
I think he was really good.
He's really good.
I really liked him.
He's been in Kiri, which I didn't think was great, but he is in this film that I'm so obsessed with that I think I may have talked about before, called Daphne, which was like an independent film all shot round where I live in Elephant and Castle. And he's the love interest in that. And he's so good in that. And yeah, he's great. So I really enjoyed seeing him in this doing a kind of nice, interesting role where he gets to have lots of kind of like spiky back and forths with Kerry Mulligan over whether he's being politically correct or not and that kind of thing. So that's quite fun. So in terms of the mystery element, spoilers for the first episode and the first episode only, because that's all we've watched. The twist that kind of comes halfway through this episode is that the murderer is a woman and she seems to be in the army.
Yeah.
And she's seemingly knows what she's doing because she seems to have worn like a full body rubber suit in order to commit the crime. And It's all very kind of like efficiently organized, almost Gone Girl-esque without the passion. You know, very, very meticulous, very serious, very, I've been planning this for a really long time and I know what I'm doing. But we're no closer to sort of understanding why on earth she's interested in killing a pizza delivery person.
Yeah, we don't know whether she's acting in her role as a captain in the army or whether she's sort of freelancing in some way. Also, we don't even know. So the guy who died, who it turns out is a Syrian refugee who was sort of working illegally for a pizza delivery place, we don't even know if he was actually really the person who was meant to die, because for shady reasons that are not fully explained yet, the pizza delivery dispatched woman at the last minute chose to send him on this job instead of the person who was meant to do it, this other lad, who was then obviously really freaked out. And because he came down the steps like wearing fairly generic like motorcycle clothes and a helmet, did the woman who was doing the shooting even know who she was killing? We don't know yet. So yeah, there are all these kind of as you would expect at the end of a first episode of four, like all these unanswered questions. In lots of ways, I realize this, in terms of plot, just reminds me of the early series of Spooks. I don't know if you ever watched. So my family was obsessed with Spooks when I was growing up. We all used to watch. I was definitely too young to watch it, but I was allowed to anyway. And in the first few series, before Matthew McFadden left, Spooks wasn't so much what it became, which was like this grand, quite big scope conspiracy theory thing. It was quite like small, and the team would like solve like small individual terrorist attacks and stuff, mostly in central London. And this kind of reminded me of that a little bit, because it used to have, also Spooks was one of the first, I think, programs on British TV to use a lot of like split screen and multi angle, which is not something that this show does, but it does move the camera around a lot in quite unexpected ways.
One of the tropes of this, the style of cinematography, is that it will be unfocused for ages on someone and then focus in on them.
Yeah.
Which sometimes I understand, because it's like, oh, this is the murderer and we don't really want you to see what they look like properly. But other times I'm like, okay, this is kind of a bit, I don't know if I like it. I'm like rubbing my glasses.
Yeah, there were a couple of times where I was like, am I sleepy or is this? Yes. Oh, the other person we should mention is in this is Nicola Walker.
Yeah.
Who plays a vicar with personal she's
like,
problems.
Not a normal vicar. She's like a cool vicar because she wears trainers and she's like gay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and she's a woman and she works for the church. But yeah, she's actually really good. She's really grounded in her performance, so, which stops it being too gimmicky, which is nice. But there's, I feel like sometimes there's something slightly self-congratulatory about that kind of casting, especially because they like show you her like putting her trainers up on the pews in the church as the opening shot. And she says something like, oh, I am in the shit. And you're like, oh, she's a vicar that swears. And then there's some more swearing later. And but yeah, she's it's nice watching her. I think she's got some quite good chemistry with John Sim, which is, you know, not in a sexual way necessarily, just acting chemistry. So that's been quite nice to see.
Are you going to keep watching it, do you think?
I don't know. I watched it with my housemate and she fell asleep for half of it, which maybe dampened my enjoyment of it. But I was a bit like, do I have the energy for this if it's not gonna... I feel like the BBC have done so many programs lately which are glossy and have big names and look good and then actually are quite disappointing as they go along. And it's not limited to the BBC, actually. There's just been a few programs like that that I've watched lately where I've been like, oh, this really wasn't worth my time in the end. So I might do the lazy critics thing of not really engaging with it unless it suddenly starts getting really good reviews and then tune back in.
I think I'm going to try and watch the second one. I think I had a slightly more positive reaction to the first one than you did. So yeah, I'm going to watch the second one, but I reserve my right to bail after that if it gets too silly, essentially.
Totally. So last week, Caroline and I watched Young Offenders, which is a BBC Three comedy series, but it is based on a 2015 film of the same name with the same cast. The film was based on a real news reports of, was it half a ton?
A ton and a half, I think,
of cocaine washing up on the coast near Cork. And I think it just did so well in Ireland that they wanted to see if they could you know, keep running with it. So it's now a series of short 20 minute to half hour episodes. It's very broad, it's very funny, and it's very kind of rooted in its setting in Cork in Ireland. And it's about two best friends kind of getting up to no good. And it's funny to learn that it was based on a film, because there are these kind of like quite action heavy sequences that do feel slightly more cinematic in the kind of, I feel like there's quite a lot of British films in that kind of taking the piss out of action movie veins, in that kind of hot fuzzy vein.
Yes, definitely. There's elements kind of that. Like, I really thought of Hot Fuzz actually when, so their like long-term nemesis is this policeman or Garda who only has a bicycle, and they have bicycles. So they just chase each other around on bicycles a lot. Which is really funny. It's just inherently comic, seeing a policeman having to chase someone on a bicycle. And then in the first episode, Jock and Connor, the lads, are stealing lead off a roof, and they get kind of cornered up there. And so they end up trying to jump from that roof onto the next one, and everything goes like slow-mo, and then they fall down a gap between the buildings and fall onto some bin bags.
I thought that looked like a CBBC sequence. Do you know old, like in 2004, they used to do like CBBC trailers or adverts, and it was always like people's heads kind of cut out and everyone would like move kind of weirdly, set to Basement Jacks. It kind of had that vibe, but it's intentionally so. It's like not trying to be super slick. It's trying to be, everything's very colourful and very kind of larger than life. Including like, you know, their silly haircuts and costumes, right down to all the details. So it's kind of inviting you to suspend your disbelief and go along with something more farcical. At first, I found it maybe a little bit jarring. And as it goes on, I find, for me, the quieter moments in this comedy are the funnier bits. The kind of like conversational, silly elements, rather than like, oh, lol, they've jumped off a building. Like, I'm not really laughing at those bits. They're kind of more plot for me and they're by the by. But for example, there's a funny conversation where the policeman has kind of got them cornered over their alibi. They have an alibi for stealing the lead on this roof. And it's, oh, we went to the cinema. And then he's like, what film did you go and see? And this, is it Connor's mum?
Connor's mum,
Connor's mum is like, one of the Batmans. I don't know which one. And then Connor's like, Batman 2. And then this guy is like, you know, that came out about 40 years ago. It's like, there's just like little moments like that, which are really silly and funny. That's probably the best stuff for me.
So we actually, in the week between saying that we were going to watch this and us now talking about it, we had a really great email from Marguerite about it, who says, excited to hear that you'll be watching Young Offenders. As someone with both parents from Cork and having spent many summers there, it's great to see a programme where Cork is the backdrop and a character itself rather than vague Irish countryside. And she actually says, I think the best starting point may be the film, because in the film, the longer format also features much of the Atlantic coastline, which is possibly her favourite place on earth, she says. Aww. So I really want to watch that now. She also makes an interesting comparison, though, with a play I think you saw recently. She says, it's also somewhat of a breath of fresh air that heavy drinking isn't an element that's beaten to death with the Irish stereotypes. I recently went to see The Ferryman, which was brilliant, but the excess drinking and swearing of an Irish Catholic family gave myself and my parents an uneasy feeling, because it seems like that's what British people still think of us.
Yeah, there is sort of like, you know, men in their 70s coming downstairs and having a shot of brandy or whatever, whiskey or whatever, first thing in the morning, and like everyone having one as though it's like totally normal, which I don't think is the case for many. I don't think just that level of pure alcoholism is very common amongst family dynamics, really. I don't know Ireland particularly well. I've got a lot of Irish family, and so I do go to Ireland, but I can't pretend to have spent loads and loads of time there to have a like particularly intimate connection with the country. But it's obvious that it's like we were talking about with Lady Bird and Sacramento. You don't really need to know the place to be able to tell that the makers of this show have an intimate connection with it and really do care about the place. So we're seeing a lot of that coming through at the moment in lots of different areas of film and TV. And I'm really happy about, especially in the UK, I feel like we've seen so many shows that have a really deep regional connection and are really doing their best to show people who might not be from that place why that place is interesting and why it has cultural relevance. And I think that's like so nice. It's really nice to see.
Yeah, I think it's really good. A bit like Marguerite says in the email, that it's really nice to see something that isn't just set in a like generic island, but a specific place. I feel like that's happening everywhere, that Whereas maybe it used to be the case that things were either set in London or elsewhere.
Yeah.
And the elsewhere was not really very well defined.
Totally. We were talking about Derry Girls in relation to this, weren't we? Which is also a specific time and place.
But it also makes me think of Clique.
Yeah,
as well.
Cleek, we watched in Edinburgh. It made me think of this country, which is the Cotswolds. And there's just a few that have been in that. I mean, also in terms of drama, if we're bringing things like Cleek into it, I feel like Kiri and Bristol, lots of good stuff outside of just like London that is getting proper.
But also lots of different things as well, because I think you could maybe have said before that when something needed like a gritty, sad backdrop, it would get I know this is very different because it was very much based on a true story, but the three girls, the thing that was based on the Rochdale grooming case, like that setting was the kind of thing that you might see a fair amount
of.
It's like it's gritty and it's poor and it's the backdrop for this tragic story.
Or you see like Morse in Oxford, like in this very kind of twee, not necessarily actually connected to real people way. So yeah, it's really nice to see people being like, hey, this is a interesting, multifaceted place that has drawbacks and positives. And it's really nice.
So yeah, I really liked Young Offenders. I'm going to keep watching it. It was really exuberant. I laughed loads during it.
Mm.
And yeah, the central characters really made me laugh. So yeah, I really like it. And I definitely want to go back and watch the film as well.
Yeah, we need to.
So we are having a week off recommends, because next week we're doing the book club. So consider The Seven Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle your recommend for next week. And yeah, and then we'll be back on the usual thing from then.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
If you enjoyed the show, why not subscribe to make sure you never miss another episode? We're available in all the usual places you get podcasts, including on Apple Podcasts, where you could leave us a rating and a review if you fancy. It makes us happy and it also helps other people find the show.
If you'd like to come and see us in person, check out the events page of our website, seriouslypod.com/events. Details of our next pop culture quiz and anything else we're doing will appear there.
We're available many other places on the internet, including on Twitter, Facebook and Tumblr. We're SeriouslyPod on all of them. Follow us to keep up with what we're up to or to chat to other listeners about things you've enjoyed on the show.
We love getting your recommendations for things we should feature on the show or hearing your thoughts on what we've already discussed. Get in touch on social media or email us on seriouslypod@gmail.com.
And if you feel strongly that more pop culture needs to be taken seriously, spread the word and tell your friends and family about the podcast.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.